Introduction. For students progressing through academic studies and disciplines, one of the key skills that is developed is the one of critical thinking. In order to develop our understanding of a subject, we should question what we are being told and, sometimes, how the information is being presented. Only when we can answer questions we have about a subject to our satisfaction can we say that we understand that subject. However, perhaps we should pause and consider, can we usefully apply similar critical thinking skills more widely? For example, when considering daily news reports, how often do we stop and think, how accurate is this information? What is the source? Or, how has this or that conclusion been drawn? Is the information complete? There are two expressions that are pertinent to the thrust of what I'm saying. Don't believe what you read in the papers, and never believe anything until it's been officially denied. The latter saying is attributed to the writers of Yes, Minister, Jonathan Lynn and Anthony Jay. In recent years, I have found I have to apply critical thinking much more widely to news reports, following a realization I had sometime in 2004. A video I watched clearly showed how the World Trade Center towers in New York could not have been destroyed solely as a result of jet impacts and burning jet fuel. It seems strange to some people that anyone should question any of the essential elements of the official story of 9/11, which is now widely recognized as the trigger for the global war on terror, a basis for many significant elements of foreign policy and even domestic laws. Discussing the topic of what really happened on 9/11 is not an easy task, not least because of the trauma it caused for the people who were killed, injured, or affected by it. The profoundly troubling nature of the event alone is a powerful deterrent to people who wish to re-examine the official accounts of what happened and question the conclusions the official inquiries have drawn. To date, no criminal prosecutions have been successfully brought against anyone in relation to the crimes committed on 9/11 or the crimes committed in its cover-up. As an event, 9/11 is mentioned almost daily in news reports, although in reality, we have not had all that much analysis of what actually happened. The run-up to 9/11 has been the subject of a significant BBC documentary series called The Power of Nightmares, which first aired in 2004. This BAFTA award winner, made by Adam Curtis, exposes the real history of Al-Qaeda and concludes that stories of this group's ability to commit acts of terrorism on a large scale have been grossly exaggerated, if not completely fabricated. In this book, readers who are unhappy with the official account and have questions about how and why certain things happened on 9/11 should find many threads to follow. These threads will lead them to a wider understanding of what happened then, and those same threads may ultimately lead them to an understanding of a much, much larger tapestry of reality. The articles herein are more concerned with the criminal cover-up of 9/11 rather than trying to identify the real perpetrators of atrocities committed on the day itself. Readers, therefore, who are comfortable with the Al-Qaeda did it story, need not read any further than this paragraph. Scope of 9/11 evidence concerned. This work is mainly concerned with the evidence related to what happened at the World Trade Center complex, as exposed through the research of Dr. Judy Wood. Therefore, matters relating to what happened to World Trade Center Building 7 are not discussed here. It is therefore primarily certain physical evidence that is covered, inasmuch as the very presentation and most likely explanation of this physical evidence has been the target of attack. Who is covering up 9/11? It's difficult to accept how deep and wide the cover-up of 9/11 actually is. The very magnitude of this cover-up is enough to make many people scoff, roll their eyes, or utter a sentence including a phrase such as, conspiracy theorist. Typically, they may then dismiss, deny or simply ignore any evidence presented which proves that the official story of 9/11 cannot be true. Some people, while acknowledging that the official story cannot be true, then assume that not enough information is available to say anything else with a sufficient degree of certainty. However, we must remember that U.S. government bodies and private contractors took public money to fund research which was supposed to explain what happened on 9/11. As informed citizens, I think we should try to be sure that what they are telling us in their official and very lengthy reports is true. NIST, or the National Institute of Standards and Technology, was tasked with analyzing the cause of the destruction of WTC Towers 1, 2, and 7. When studied objectively, their report for WTC 1 and 2 fails to answer how the pancake collapse theory explains the evidence observed on that day, such as the complete pulverization of most of the towers, including hundreds of steel girders, in about 10 seconds each. Readily available photos also illustrate the glaring lack of any pancakes in the WTC rubble pile. Elements of the final NIST WTC reports have been the subject of a legal challenge by Professors Morgan Reynolds, Emeritus, Texas A&M University, and Professor of Mechanical Engineering Judy Wood, formerly of Clemson University, South Carolina. Their challenge was first made as a request for correction and then in two QITAM cases. These cases, unsealed in 2007, outlined how, as it is framed, the NIST study of the WTC collapse was fraudulent and deceptive. Indeed, the very title of the main report, The Collapse of the World Trade Center Towers, is itself misleading because the towers did not collapse. They turned to dust. How is it that the world's media chose to completely ignore press releases concerning the initiation of legal cases against NIST's contractors by two American professors? A layered cover-up. The bulk of these articles have been written in the period 2007 to 2009 in an attempt to document the history of what may become known as the second layer of the 9/11 cover-up. The first layer of the 9/11 cover-up is the official and physically impossible Al-Qaeda-centered fantasy, accompanied by the significantly fraudulent NIST reports. The second layer of the cover-up includes supposedly more scientific analysis by some researchers, scientists, which suggest that bombs and/or thermite, or some variant thereof, were placed in the WTC. A number of higher-profile 9/11 skeptic figures claim there is good evidence for the use of thermite and/or bombs, but those same researchers have failed to compile any of this evidence into a legal case against NIST or anyone else. The same figures typically still go along with the TV reality of real Boeing planes hitting the WTC towers, even though this story is demonstrably impossible, largely because of Newton's third law. The difficulty for most people here is that it takes time to digest the evidence and undo the effects of years of media TV programming. In my own case, even though by about August 2004, I knew the official story of 9/11 was false, it was not until about 2 years later, however, that I realized the plane crashes at the WTC could not have been real, even though it seems that something hit the WTC towers. Articles in this work discuss and explain this conclusion more fully. On the Internet, I have posted a report detailing the previous 2 years of campaigning efforts completed before I realized there was an ongoing effort to discourage and discredit certain threads of 9/11 research. Finding the truth. So, what is the truth? How do you find it? Can anything be proved? Well, before becoming too philosophical, let me offer you something. Evidence. My own way of establishing what is true and what is not is to constantly examine evidence and try to reevaluate my own conclusions whenever new evidence appears. And at the same time, we must be wary of falsified evidence and even the timing of its revelation. I might point out that court cases and investigations, etc., are sometimes reopened and appeals are initiated when new evidence comes to light. The importance of establishing what did not happen on 9/11. By studying the evidence carefully, we can have a better chance of saying with certainty what did not happen, even if we cannot always say exactly what did happen. In some cases, laws of physics can be used to establish what can and cannot have happened. We can check the consistency of a set of evidence. This includes the use of things like the law of gravity, and also the properties of materials, hardness, softness, and limits of their behavior. People who are not familiar with physical laws and how they dictate what is and is not possible in our three-dimensional physical reality can more easily be fooled by illusions. People who are familiar with physical laws can also be fooled, as I was for 3 years, when they can't see a motive for an illusion being created, or they don't take time to look at evidence, or don't want to accept the implications. They may then resort to evidence denial or other forms of cognitive dissonance. The importance of studying history and people's behavior. As well as evidence of physical events, witness testimony and behavior is also important. In relation to the development of 9/11 research, I have tried to watch carefully for instances of attacking the messenger, rather than explaining the data, discouraging study of certain topics or evidence, misdirection, inconsistent or false statements, reluctance to answer questions relating to evidence when relevant. My goal in this work is not necessarily to judge those people who are helping the 9/11 cover-up. I am trying to illustrate how the psychology of the cover-up has unfolded and how subtle and not so subtle tactics are being used to influence people's views and conclusions. Truth, authority, power, and corruption. Presentation, discussion, and analysis of evidence is, or should be, the guiding principle behind real scientific progress and discovery. It should also be the guiding principle behind a fair legal justice system. However, it can be strongly argued that both these systems are only as fair and honest as those who become figures of authority within them. When people are given authority, they have power over others by definition, and therein is the rub. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Perhaps it is true that only when some entities have absolute power do operations like 9/11 and its successful cover-up become possible. Education and academic excellence. It is said by some that going through the educational system hampers one's ability to think freely, though this seems to be in contradiction to the idea of being able to think critically. Perhaps this is due to the process of being spoon-fed information. Most students, especially in their formative years, either implicitly assume the information is truthful and/or valid, or they are chastised if they persistently question or challenge the prevailing view about a topic. In higher university-level education, however, one is expected to be able to think freely, to perform research, to analyze, compare, and contrast information, and to draw conclusions. The problem is perhaps not so much the educational system itself, but the interests it serves, and the institutionalization of the system itself, as well as the system of awards, both in the form of grants and for academic excellence, and the various prizes that are given. Relying on sources of funding creates a vested interest, and it was this that President Eisenhower seemed to be referring to in his landmark 1961 final address to the American nation before he left office. He said, "Partly because of the huge costs involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded." Also, winning awards tends to build up egos, and it can constrain the boundaries in which those award winners feel comfortable operating, and perhaps makes them less willing to challenge established paradigms. I would argue this, therefore, makes them more dogmatic and unwilling to review new evidence. Again, I would contend that President Eisenhower wanted to highlight this issue in the same speech. Yet, in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite. For this reason, I concluded audio segments of this speech at the beginning of a presentation I compiled, which summarizes some of the main research and evidence discussed in this collection of articles. This presentation can be found online using this link, http://tinyurl.com/911ftt. Oh, what a tangled web has been woven! One of the things which I have found since I started to pull the thread of what some people call alternative knowledge is that the many topics it encompasses cannot really be understood in isolation. For example, the energy cover-up, which arguably in the 20th century started with the marginalization and manipulation of Nikola Tesla, is inextricably linked to the 9/11 cover-up. Social pressures and norms, as well as media repetition of misrepresentative information or conclusions, all tend to discourage the curious mind from researching for itself. The furnishings and time constraints of most people's everyday lives also inhibit or prevent a detailed investigation of important issues. Added to that, with certain experienced researchers, it seems to be the case that they reach a point and formulate their own views or conclusions, and at some point these views become dogmatic and intransigent, and they are unwilling or unable to review and digest new evidence when it comes to light. Finally, in writing these articles, I have concluded that most of the alternative knowledge community is infiltrated and controlled by the same group or groups that perpetrated 9/11. A message. In all of this, my prime message and statement would be, don't let anyone give you your opinion. Check and validate as much as you can and continually question authority. Questions should be asked of both recognized authorities, such as scientific, governmental, or non-governmental institutions, and of unofficial authority, such as an experienced researcher or research group, speaker, or author. I strongly contend that because no organized institution of any significant size, such as the church, the legal system, any major government, etc., after over 7 years has publicly spoken out to significantly disagree with the official story of 9/11, it is clear the institutions cannot handle the truth of what really happened on 9/11. Therefore, the future is in our hands, yours and mine. We have the power to create and transform our future with every action we take and every word we say.